I'm Ryan Nedrossov. Welcome to Let's Think Digital. If you're a regular listener to this podcast, you'll know that many of this season's conversations with guests like Jennifer Polka, Hilary Hartley, and Sean Boots were recorded on location at the Forward 50 conference in Ottawa. Now, if you haven't heard of Forward 50, you should. It's one of the premier conferences on digital modernization in government and exists to help answer one vital question. How do we use technology to make society better for all? Held in Ottawa every year in November, the conference brings together an amazing community of public servants, technologists, and civic innovators. And on this episode of Let's Think Digital, you're going to get an opportunity to hear directly from some of the participants in last year's conference. We had set up a Speaker's Corner segment where we invited anybody at Forward 50 who wanted to share their views on what their hope for the future of digital government is and what they think might be stopping us from getting there. But before I get to that, I wanted to extend my gratitude to the team at Forward 50 for agreeing to set us up with our podcast recording booth during the conference. And how better to extend that gratitude but directly with two of the key founders and organizers of Forward 50 joining us here on Let's Think Digital, namely Alistair Kroll and Rebecca Kroll. Alistair, Rebecca, welcome to Let's Think Digital.
Thank you so much for having us.
Good to see you.
So I was thinking back a little bit to the very first Forward 50 in 2017, which, to be honest, sounds like feels like a lifetime ago to me. A lot has happened since then. And, you know, for some of the people listening, they might not be familiar with how and why Forward 50 was created and would be interested if you're able to share a little bit about kind of the origin story of Forward 50 and how you both came to be involved in it.
On a dare.
Yeah, I'll take that one. So as you may know, there was a conference called GTEC, a government technology conference that happened every year. 2016 was the last year that conference happened. And while it was very trade showy sort of expo hall, there was a conference within it, a discussion within it that many people in the public service felt was really useful, particularly at a time when Canada was considering joining the digital nations and had a digital government minister and so on. And so what I was told is that a bunch of people made lists of names that might be able to do a conference, with the criteria being that they understood technology, that they knew how to run conferences, that they were Canadian, and that they were bilingual. Fait que de mon côté, j'étais sur des listes, puis la plupart des personnes sont venues me demander, se sont rassemblées, puis se sont dit c'est qui qu'on devrait appeler. So my name came up, and I think I literally got dared on LinkedIn by Alex Binet. And then some other friends said, no, he's actually serious. This is, and so we looked into it, and we had to come up with a name for the conference. And at the time, it was Canada's 150th and so on. But we didn't want to lock in. We liked the fact that we were being reflective about the long curve of history. So We knew we wanted to be nonpartisan. So we chose the name Forward, neither left nor right, but Forward. And we knew that all the speakers should be thinking about three timeframes: the policies you can change relatively quickly in like 50 days, the platforms you can build in 50 months, roughly an electoral term, and the society that you want in 50 years. So that's where the name Forward 50 came from.
That's great. And then Rebecca, you got your arm twisted in by your brother to come join the team and pull this together, right?
Yeah, Alistair and I have been sort of a content duo for 14 years now. We work on another event together called Startup Fest, which was started in 2011. And so it was a really natural fit for, pardon me, for the team behind Startup Fest to move into working on this with Alistair. And it's important. It felt important. So For us, it was a no-brainer. We liked the idea of making a difference.
Yeah. And I'll just say, I mean, you know, I'm biased because I've been involved since the beginning and always happy to support it. But I enjoy the conference every year. You and the team do an amazing job of just, you know, the venue of the content of the program, of the ambiance there. And it's a great coming together point for the community of folks who are interested in working on, you know, digital modernization within government. And, you know, this year's edition in November of 2023, no exception. We have had an opportunity on this podcast over the last number of months to revisit some of the ideas and conversations from there through the speaker interviews that we did during the conference. I'm curious for both of you, you know, from the 2023 edition a few months ago, what stood out for you as real highlights or themes that came out of last year's conference?
I can definitely chime in on some highlights. I finally got to meet Sean Boots in person. Definite highlight.
Shocking that hadn't happened before, but that's great.
I know. So that was a definite highlight. He's a gem of a human. But I think the thing that really stood out to me was the community kind of made it its own. I got an email from Honey Dakini saying, hey, I'd like to run a book club with Jen Palka on this morning. We said, great. That was community organized. People flocked to that. They had great conversations. That wasn't us doing anything other than providing a space. And the engagement online, like it felt like the world was paying attention last year. It was sort of we leveled up something. The world was just ready to engage. And we had online workshops with over 800 attendees, like the actual, which is insane. And so especially when, on the other hand, we've got this really interesting main stage content that's also being streamed. People can be engaged there, but they were attending the workshops. They were learning. They were eager. And so for that, it's just really, really gratifying. I also highlight for me was the backstage tour. It sort of culminated. And on day three, we did a backstage tour. Yeah,
we decided to do that.
We started in the green room.
There was this was just like, hey, we should start back here.
Yeah. And so we followed him around on a gimbal. Everyone online got to see what was going on. And what was so great was it was like, wow, we've really figured this hybrid thing out, because we had Alistair being followed around backstage all the way through the audience. Hello to the in-person audience. Meanwhile, the in-person audience is seeing what the camera's seeing on the big screen. We're able to pop in the comments from the online audience up to that screen so that the in-person audience can see them all being like, hey, hi from so-and-so, hello from Australia, wherever they might be tuning in from. There was this sense of, we've really managed to bring the community together. Yeah. And that was tremendously
gratifying. Yeah, that feedback loop you see on the gimbal camera, the people's reaction to the person at home putting up a comment to say hello to the people in the room. We didn't know that could work, but it was pretty cool when it did.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, I mean, I think for everybody listening, we know how tough hybrid events are, both as a participant and as an organizer. And I think you've really done an amazing job of trying to zero in on how to make that an experience gratifying and useful for people on both sides of that. Alistair, from your end, anything that really stood out from last year's
conference? Yeah, a couple of things. It was our first time doing an executive cohort. That was a new experiment. We try very hard to reinvent ourselves before we have to, because that's something we encourage government to do. Mm-hmm. It's always frustrated me that while you need to write a document to explain why you're going to do something differently in the government, there's no document you need to write to explain why you're still going to do things the same way. And so one of my philosophies is sort of, you reinvent things while you can. We ran this executive cohort. We didn't charge extra for it. It was the executives who qualified could attend. But 70 people there. You saw some of this stuff. But it was really interesting. We had we had 2 weeks online, and it was interesting to see how well that worked. People had a little bit of Zoom fatigue, but by the end, when they met in person, they already kind of knew each other, which was nice. The other thing that this sounds weird, but it's always the little things that get me. About Forward 50. 2 years ago, this woman came up to me in tears, and I said, what's wrong? And she says, nothing's wrong. It's the first time in 3 years I've wanted to go back to my desk. And that really stuck with me. So this year, we were out back watching the loading trucks come in, and there was a woman who we brought 10 people from my team this year. And I go, that's great. She said, well, last year we only brought two. I said, oh, how come? Oh, we had budgets. So what we did is, like, we went back to our office, and each month we'd pick a thing we were working on, and the two of us that had gone found a video or two that was related to that topic, and we'd all watch those videos. One of us would log in on Teams to access and would, like, stream the videos, and then we'd talk about how to apply those lessons in policy making or whatever to the project work. And I'm like, wait, you really use these things? So as an organizer, I think we don't really understand what people are doing with the community that we've built. And it's really nice to see those kind of emergent properties. To me, that's the sign of a healthy event.
Yeah. And I think for people who actually may not be aware of this, you put a lot of the content from the conference online. And I think you were saying to me, Alistair, the content from last year's conference from 2023 will go up in May to be available to people.
Do you want to explain that, Becky?
It's available. Yeah, absolutely. It's available on our community platform Access, which you can access through our website for all ticket holders. And anyone can access previous year's content. So it's up there. The world can take a look, whatever's useful. We've got a really great catalog of some incredible videos up there that we've been filming really since 2020 when everything locked down and we moved to fully virtual. And so we continue to update that. And what we do is keep it gated for our ticket holders until May. Mm-hmm. And then in May, we, like the other years, make it open to everybody. So coming in May, all of the 2023 content will be available to anyone who's interested in hosting some viewing parties.
Yeah, that's great. So, you know, we'll put a link in the show notes for your YouTube channel, but it really, there is a wealth of resources there and really would encourage people to check it out. So speaking of 2024, we're about 8 months away from our this year's edition of Forward 50. And I know you're probably still a little bit in recovery mode from last year, but planning starts early on these things. So I wanted to maybe get you to talk a little bit about, you know, when you're planning an event of this magnitude, like when do you get started? How do you decide what's on the agenda and what you're going to focus on?
Becky, how many Forward 50,
December 1st.
How many Forward 50 events did you have in your calendar this week? I had seven. I went and looked.
Yeah, we've had it's honestly become a year-round thing, which is great. The thing that's really incredible is the community that's come in around this, yourself included. We've got partners from around the world now that want to contribute, that want to get involved, that have ideas, that want us to come to them. And so it really is an ongoing process. We literally start planning out what next year might look like a couple of weeks after recovering from the event itself. So we already have sort of our grids and our agendas and things like mm-hmm. that. And we had a big planning meeting on Wednesday. We're going to do some adjustments and things. So it's well underway.
Yeah, and we, one of the things we're thrilled about is one of the reasons we're able to deliver a content-heavy conference and not have the usual expo trade floor. And there's a few reasons. One of them is organizations like you help produce some amazing content. But we are very lucky that we have departments who are eager to support us. And so we follow up with those departments. We even put things in the surveys just for them immediately after the conference, like a week or two after. And we're translating and transcribing all the videos and captioning them. So it really doesn't stop at all. And then the sales cycle for government departments is 8 months. So like we're talking to people now about how many people they're sending and so on. It's a very long process. But it's something that we've recognized has to happen year round. And like I was literally in London 2 weeks ago talking to potential partners there. So,
I think, and Alistair alluded to it earlier, we constantly want to reinvent ourselves. We don't want to get complacent. We worry constantly about jumping the shark mm-hmm. and losing the trust that we have gained. I mean, we're not of government, but we seem to have gained the trust of government and they think that their time is worth spending with us. And so that is hugely important to us. We pulled together as a result an amazing advisory board, which a certain Ryan has joined this year. Thank you, Ryan.
Honored to be there.
That helps keep us honest and helps us make sure that we're talking about the important things that we need to be talking about. So yeah, it's a constant year-round concern of how do we not suck.
Yeah, well, I think you've more than met that bar, and I think it shows in terms of that evolution that happens every year. And I will just say the international flavor to Forward 50 is always a highlight too. I think that's one of the nice things about the event is, you know, largely Canadian participants, but you're getting a very wide-ranging both kind of content experience, but then as somebody who's been involved a little bit more behind the scenes, you get people connecting, right? When they come together from all over the world for these few years. And I think there's been some very interesting kind of side conversations that have evolved and bubbled up over the years from
remember
from
year
events.
One, Canada was not in the digital nations and we kind of engineered a meeting where a bunch of the right people were all together around a bar. Like we literally said, you're all going to come in and we're going to stand here. And I think three or four members of the digital nations plus Minister Bryson, and within a few months, they were flying off to New Zealand to sign membership.
Yeah, and that, you know, that kind of social connection within these communities internationally can be so important long-term, right, in terms of the benefits of building that community more broadly. You mentioned survey, and I wanted to just also highlight this for listeners. I think one of the very participatory things that you do each year is have a content survey that goes out to anybody who wants to give feedback on what should be on the agenda for the coming year. That content survey, I know, is live right now. We'll put a link for it in the show notes for people to be able to go fill it out. But if you want to just take a moment and kind of mention, you know, what's in the content survey and how that's helpful to shape the agenda each year.
That's on you, Becky. I've done enough talking. Yeah.
Oh, is it? I was going to say, Alistair crafts the survey and crunches the numbers every year. Essentially what it is, and it's what's interesting is that because we've been running it so long, we can see how priorities have shifted. And it's going to take you about 7 to 10 minutes to fill out. It's not a quick survey, but mm-hmm. we want people's attention on it because it really does help inform us what we should be teaching at Forward 50. So what's front of mind? What's not front of mind? Where have your priorities shifted? So if anyone listening, please go and fill out the survey. You will help us a lot. The more answers that we can get from more people around the world, the more helpful it is for us to craft useful content. Ultimately, yep. That's it. That's what we use it for.
Yeah. No, that's great. And, you know, and speaking of content and kind of themes that come out of Forward 50, certainly, you know, on this season of the Let's Think Digital podcast and with some of the interviews we did at last year's Forward 50, there's been kind of this persistent notion of us feeling a bit stuck in the mud right now on digital here in Canada. And, you know, this question around how do we take our ambitions and our dreams and actually turn them into something real and tangible? I'm curious from both of you, you know, when you think about the evolution of Forward 50, do you see that conversation having evolved over the last 7 years, or do you share this kind of sense of stuckness that I think a lot of people were expressing?
I would say 100% there is a sense of stuckness. Absolutely. I think one of the things that we are good at, because we are not of government, we get to be that little fly in the ointment. We can say, okay, Canada's having a challenge with X. Who can we look at from our global partners and say, who's solving this problem well, and bring them in, and maybe they can shed some light. They can show how they become unstuck. I think we have a lot of content focused on hacking bureaucracy mm-hmm. and how to get around the norm. That's the problem, is that there needs to be a hack.
Yeah.
Like we need to, the stuck is the bureaucracy of it all, right? So yeah. how do we fix that so there isn't that stuckness, so people can actually move forward on their projects and their plans without the constant roadblocks?
Yeah. And seeing what that art of the possible could look like based on how others have been approaching this. Alistair, anything that kind of jumps out to you on this, on kind of the evolution of this conversation over the last 7 years?
Just a few things. Yeah. So I wrote this book called Lean Analytics from Ideas in the Startup World, which is all about using data to make things change. Patrick Collison has this amazing blog post about things that were built quickly, very few of them in recent years. The ability to get things done, and I talked about this year about the collapse of complex societies and Joseph Tainter's research on when societies fail, when we find externalities and try to regulate them, and the cost of regulating those externalities adds to the burden until the system cannot make enough energy to sustain its organizational tools, right? We are, I think, I testified at the ArriveCan hearings about a year and a half ago, and I said, look, Canada used to be number 3 in the world, according to the UN. We're now number 31 and I think falling. Mm-hmm. That's because, it's not because we didn't do stuff, it's because other people did and we didn't. I would love it if we had to defend why we weren't changing something rather than why we were. We put so many times someone has to write a plan to say, here's what I want to change and here's the justification. I'd love to see people justify not changing. Hey, I want to keep this system facts-based because it costs the taxpayer 5 times as much, right? Right. Why aren't we forcing people to justify the existence of existing systems? Because by not forcing people to do that, we've slid from 3rd to 31st. I think 5 years ago, we were shifting from technology learning to cultural learning. But I think people are furious. And I think the citizens are furious. And I think public servants and citizens too, and they know it's broken. And that mm-hmm. what had become, what started as frustration, I think is turning into outright anger. Anger at the incredible costs we're racking up building things. Anger at the excesses that a poorly staffed public service forces us to pay to third parties and private sector consultants. I think people are furious. And in an era where I can order my transportation and my food with a tap, the fact that I can't see my digital life and my history with the government across my tax payments and my healthcare and all this in one place, like, we're not going to tolerate a government that knows more about us than we do. So show us what you know in a way that makes it useful. And I think there's right. a level of anger that wasn't there a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think as you're getting at, you know, that public pressure builds political momentum. And we've seen in countries around the world that you kind of need that leadership and political dimension in sync to really be able to move things.
Innovation loves a crisis. There's a reason why Estonia has a very, very good digital platform. It's because it's next to Russia. There's a reason why South Korea has a really good one. It's next to North Korea. I don't know what that says about Australia, that New Zealand has a good one, but we'll let that go.
Yeah, no.
And I mean, you were talking about it too with, I think, Senator Colin Deakin in a previous episode. All of these same things. Like, there are a lot of problems that need to be fixed.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, you know, again, why I look forward to Forward 50 every year, because I think that can be a venue where we get people together who care about this deeply, who've got experience on it, who hopefully can use that as part of the way to step out of their daily kind of box that they're in and think about, again, how to stretch and rethink their approaches to this and hopefully be able to keep moving the ball forward. And I guess on that note, a little bit of kind of a pivot forward to looking to this year's Forward 50, wanted to get a sense from you of, you know, why should people be coming, aside from everything we've talked about already? What's new on the agenda? I know there are a few things happening in terms of the format, in terms of activities. Would love to give people a bit of a preview of what to expect from Forward 50 this year in November.
I think one of the things we're really excited about, pardon me, is that Alistair is going to be joined by a co-host.
Yes.
And we've invited Hillary Hartley to join him on stage as the main stage co-host. We are completely thrilled. It's been pretty much the Alistair show for many years now, and we felt it was time to get another voice in there. So we're super excited that Hillary, who's been on our advisory board and a longtime friend and supporter for years now, has accepted the role of co-host for Forward 50. So
yeah, I was
That's a huge thing.
I was thrilled to see that. I'm a big fan of Hillary's, and for podcast listeners, you'll remember she was on an episode a few weeks back, and if you didn't hear it, go check it out, but that's great. So Hillary's joining Alistair on the main stage. There's also some format changes, I think, coming up as well, potentially.
You heard it here first,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Alistair can chime in on that. Yeah. You heard it here first.
So Becky actually said something a few months ago. She's like, you know, now that we have figured out hybrid, where there's some things that work really well in person, like in-person workshops and face-to-face networking. There's some things that work really well virtually. Try and move 1,000 humans from one room to another on Zoom. It's easy. In the real world, it takes half an hour. And there's some things that work really well together where everybody's watching amazing content. And so we really have kind of solved the what's a hybrid conference. You're running two simultaneous conferences and then overlapping them wherever possible. So I kind of drew this Venn diagram of like, here's conference one in person, here's conference two, it's virtual, and you slide them together. But the stuff that doesn't overlap, there's no reason it has to happen simultaneously. And many people had told us, oh, I was upset that I had to go to this in-person workshop and I missed this virtual one. So what we're thinking of doing this year, and this is still, I would say, 10% tentative because we're working on some of the details, but we just finished a series of calls with all the big departments, is we're going to do an online-only day sometime in October. This is great. People can register on the platform. They can start using it. And we can have content from around the world, which you may as well watch in the comfort of your home. There's no reason to go to a physical stage and watch stream content when you could watch it at your desk, right? And so we can use that day to bring on some amazing speakers from around the world who might otherwise not be able to make the trip. And then we'll have 3 days in person, but the third of those 3 days would be in-person activities only, much more focused on engineered networking, because many people say they love connecting with their peers. So if we bring some of those speakers and mentors in, they get to connect with their peers. And then the last thing is we may do some regional things. I'm actually headed to DC next week. That's more of a TEDx kind of model, but it would allow us to do a smaller event with a partner in a region and then make that content available to ticket holders.
That's great. Yeah, I think those all sound like great innovations on the agenda, and looking forward to seeing how that all comes together this year. Also, the other thing I wanted to make sure people were aware of is I think folks often think about Forward 50 as, you know, the conference in November, but you actually have events that go on for the Forward 50 community throughout the year. Can you maybe just share a little bit about those types of webinars and other events that happen throughout the year that people can plug into?
Absolutely, yeah. Something that we started
several years ago now, we wanted to find a way during the pandemic to keep the community engaged because it was rough. Like really early on, we started doing something called Forward Thinking, where we'd bring together people sort of once a month for conversations. Now that we're sort of back to the new normal, we run things, one called book clubs. We do book clubs, which are open to everybody. We run them through LinkedIn Live. And then we do our Forward 50 extras, which tend to be sort of same format. We use LinkedIn Live and we talk to folks that are doing amazing things that we want to shed a spotlight on. We're very fortunate that we have this platform and our goal is to highlight great people doing cool things. And so that's what sort of falls under the Forward 50 extras umbrella is that online content that we offer throughout the year.
That's great. So my last question for both of you is, people who have not been to Forward 50 before who are listening to this podcast episode, they might be wondering, you know, is this for me? Would this be a conference that I would benefit from? So number one, you know, who's the conference for and who should be there of people who haven't attended before that you'd like to see attending? And then for those who are interested, where can they go to get more information about the conference and the other programming that you run?
So good question. We aim the conference at public servants. It's not aimed at politicians. It's not aimed at the private sector per se, although they're certainly valuable to have in the room. It is aimed at public servants around the world. That includes people at the municipal, county, state, provincial, and federal level. In fact, there's a program we have called the Regional Digital, the Regional Access Pass, where two people from any government in the world, so two people from a municipality or from a state or whatever, can claim tickets to attend virtually for free. We are a for-profit company. We're a very small for-profit company, and the profits aren't very big either. But we want to make sure that we try to be good citizens. And in that regard, that's why we put stuff on access for people to watch. So this regional access pass thing, I think there are literally tens of thousands of people potentially who could attend this conference virtually for free. And so just letting them know, hey, this is valuable stuff where you will meet your peers and hear other people who've encountered the same problems for free is a big thing. The second thing is last year, there were $19 billion of budget cuts announced in the federal government. And we decided to initiate a program called No Department Left Behind, where we gave two tickets to every department. Over 70 departments claimed that. Some people even in like the parliamentary libraries were like, hey, do we qualify? Can we have some? And that, I think, dramatically increased the variety of departments that were represented. And then the third thing was with the executive cohort, we had a couple of departments that were very tentative. They're like, I don't want to endorse this to my executives in case it's no good. I mean, they should have known better by now, but it was great. and so many of those people are eager to bring others back. So I think targeting executives who say, oh, no, this is for my employees. No, it's not. And we even have special content for executives, but you should also come to the main event. Targeting regions that aren't aware of what we are doing, which can get tremendous value for free, like tell your friends, really. And making sure that we get across all the different departments. There are obviously shared services in TBS. Everyone knows that's a technical department. But like Library and Archives Canada, you guys work with information. So they brought a whole bunch of people and we set up a library for them. So the more departments realize that digital is unavoidable, it's the only way we are going to build an affordable, sustainable government that the people support, yep. The better.
Yeah, and
yeah, I mean, I think.
Go ahead, Rebecca. Oh,
sorry, Ryan. No, I was just going to add. I think when we started in 2017, it was largely for people who were working on digital government initiatives. That's changed completely. Everyone should be thinking about digital government now. So if you think that digital government doesn't apply to you, you need to come to Forward 50.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And I think also to Alistair's point about the executives, he made a really interesting comment last year about, where are you on the ladder of the hierarchy of government and who can you protect underneath you to help make their job easier? So getting the executives in so that they see how they can help the people that they're working with make these changes that everybody wants to see, because we hear so much, oh, I'm getting blocked. It's the executives, all of that sort of thing. So getting those executives in to be like, no, we want to be part of the solution and we're going to help the people that are that work with us under that, I think would be a big win.
Yeah, as I'm fond of saying, you know, in today's world, every policy issue is a digital issue. And
exactly.
I think the more we can get people who don't traditionally think of themselves as being involved in digital or IT, I think there's always these kind of aha moments that happen when we do that, that people realize, actually, this is impacting my job. And this 100%. Needs to be a core competency if you're going to be able to be an effective leader in the public service in today's world. So that's great. I know information about the conference is up on your website, forward50.com, FWD50.com. We'll put the link for that in the show notes as well. Thanks so much, Alistair and Rebecca. Really appreciate you joining us today and giving us a little bit of a taste of what people can expect from Forward 50 2024. And as always, us at the Think Digital team are looking forward to being a part of it and collaborating with you.
As always. Yeah.
Thank you. And thank you for being such a great partner.
Honestly, I mean, you're underselling your involvement in this in the early days of CDS and so on, but... nobody's more surprised than we are that this has become like the leading gathering, and we just want to make sure that we stay true to that audience, because it's been a fantastic experience so far. So thanks again.
Yep, absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to both of you. And now it's time for our Speakers Corner segment and an opportunity to hear directly from some of the participants at last year's conference as to what they think the future of digital government might bring. I hope you enjoy. So, important question first, if you can let us know who you are and why you're here at Forward 50.
So I'm Amy Curtai. I'm the Director of Digital Strategy with the province of British Columbia.
My name's Andy Best. I'm an independent public data advisor.
My name's Amanda Bernardo. I'm currently an acting director with Shared Services Canada.
My name's Liz Christie. I am a senior policy analyst at the Public Health Agency of Canada working on data transparency.
I'm Charles Finley. I'm here representing Helpful Places, and I'm wearing a second hat, which is supporting the Code for Canada team that's here as well, Canada's national civic tech nonprofit.
My name is Dea DeGerisco, and the Senior Product Director also for the BC government.
My name is Roy Nader. I've been with the government for 18 years.
My name is Derek Alton. I am the Community Insights Lead for Apolitical.
My name is Aruj Qureshi. I'm a consultant with the government.
My name is Pascal. I am the DG of Strategy for the CIO of Canada, Catherine Luelo, and I know Ryan from way back.
I'm James Duncan. I'm one of the three partners at a, we'll call it a boutique consultancy called Stance. We're based in the UK.
I'm Jeff Outram. I'm a free agent with Treasury Board currently at Transport Canada.
I'm Louis Eisen, and I've been speaking at this conference for about the last 4 years.
I come to Forward 50 mostly for the connection that we get, the ability to learn from each other what's going somewhere else, so we can walk the talk of being digital and learn from each other and not reinvent constantly the wheel.
Fortunate to work with Forward 50 in the last 3 years as a collaborator and volunteer to help host their industry innovation stage. But truthfully, I've been here because working in digital, it's one of the few opportunities where all of us have the opportunity to connect, to learn, to network, to see what's out there, to really kind of get inspired and bring those ideas back to our organizations to implement those changes I strive to achieve in my team.
I attended this year because I was on a panel with Public Digital and was talking about service standards and codes of practice and how one might be able to do it. And one of the cool things that we did in BC was develop this policy completely in the open, which was very unique. And so, yeah, very excited to have been here to be able to share the learnings that we had with the various attendees.
I mean, this is the place to be if you want to figure out how do we make government work better. Just got some of the best minds from around the world who are here. The talks have been amazing. The conversations in the hallways have been amazing, both online and in person. This is the place. Of course, I'm here.
So this is the seventh year that Forward 50 has been a conference. So if we think to 7 years in the future, right, if we're back here in 2030, what is your vision or ambition for what you hope government looks like by then?
Think about government so good you don't even know it's there. So, and we've seen pockets of innovation in this space. Like you have ESDC doing auto enrollment. When they have good data on when you turn 65, they can automatically enroll you for benefits like CPP or OAS. We know the vast majority of Estonians, we love Estonia, but can file their taxes in under 2 minutes. And I think that there's so many opportunities there to better serve people, and to design client experiences that are user-centric and that actually get people the benefits that they need without them having to do all the hard work on interacting with government.
I envision this digital talents across the BC Public Service, building human-centric products and services, and not just that, but all those systems talking to each other that creates a streamlined process. I want to see a headline in 2030 that says, wow, BC Gov did it. This is the most amazing service that the government has ever done, beats Estonia.
I would say inclusion is one of those things. Inclusion, not just within teams, but with civic society and how we gather feedback, how we make decisions around the solutions that the government needs to bring into place to serve Canadians from coast to coast to coast. And so I feel that we talk about inclusion today, but there's so much more we can do. And with the introduction of things like AI, where, you know, we can go in different directions. AI can either be a connector or it could be, you know, a divider. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really curious to see what kind of applications we'll bring in the public sector through the work we do in digital transformations that bring people together and creates that inclusion.
So there are going to be technologies that are up 7 years from now that we just cannot even imagine. Today, we're all fighting about AI, and what's that been, a year since ChatGPT mm-hmm. is up? So to try and predict what is going to happen with the government, where it should be, really tough. One of the areas that most fascinates me is the shared information between departments and how we manage that digitally. And clearly, from my perspective, the impediment is will, because we can think of all kinds of legal and risk reasons and everything, but they're all overcomable. And it's just a matter of will. Are you willing to take that step and try and make it happen?
We have today's gathering here at Forward 50, which is a lot of individuals who work in the public service or around the public service who are digitally savvy. There's been so much progress made in the last few years, it's unbelievable. So what I'd like to see by 2030 is that group tripled, quadrupled in size to the point at which it's actually encompassing most of the public service.
One thing I've been hearing on repeat has been about digital talent and the ability to hire and work from anywhere. And I think we almost minimize how important that is for our future workforce, especially in an area where we're competing not only within ourselves, but with private sectors and other industries.
What are you concerned the barriers might be for us to achieve your vision for 2030?
I've been noticing there's a lot of burnout. There's a lot of people who are on mental health leave right now just because they're exhausted. We've talked about the lack of sort of direction from leadership, which has been frustrating a lot of people. Although it's easy to point fingers, which is not helpful. So I think the thing that I think holds us back is just that burnout and lack of leadership.
I think stronger leadership is really needed in this space. When you look at the meaning of transformation in the dictionary, it really requires a lot of rigor and, well, backbone. And when I say backbone, is having the integrity to make the decisions that you've made, you know, and seeing that through, and also inspiring the people that work with you to enable the change.
The nature of the organizations we work in is that they do compel you into a box, and we, you know, the tallest poppy gets cut down with a great deal of frequency. And I think the hardest thing is for people to act in such a way that they are willing to take the risk of being cut down.
We have a really big culture that we need to have a fully costed out, totally done, every contingency plan before we can start even the most minor of improvements. And if you can't iterate, you're never going to be able to really deliver real change. And so what I really hope that we can do is get past that culture of everything must be solved before we can try and solve anything, and really just try and start with small steps and get every win along the way.
We're seeing, and I kind of fear it, is this idea that the government is going to own your digital ID. That's a concern to me, because people have no problem giving that to private sector, and they have every problem giving to government, when ideally there are actually already laws in place to protect people from their very fears. and their fears are actually coming true in the private sector. So if we can actually work to educate and get Canadians on board, they're going to understand what different orders of government are trying to do and why we're working together and why we're looking to share information, such as having the CRA auto-complete your tax income if you're, you know, low income or if you're a retiree. They're quite simple and straightforward. Why put the onus on the taxpayer to figure it out when it can be done almost automatically?
People giving up on government. You know, like we have to. It's a big theme, and it's part of what State Capacity is driving at. But we have to believe that government can deliver things.
Yep.
Government can solve hard problems. We have to believe that government can invent. Government can regulate. You know, government can still help to play a foundational role in ensuring a safe, prosperous, forward-looking society.
We need strong folks that are going to support, you know, the up-and-coming public servants that are maybe coming in with knowledge that we don't have, or, you know, there was a great talk this morning about in a couple of years, there's going to be a whole cohort of public servants that have been using AI and ChatGPT for years, and how are we going to be preparing them for a career in public service? And so I think this being openness to change and being willing to kind of rise with the tides and weather those things will really help us be more open and kind of get to where we want to be in a number of years. But if we're resistant to that, or, you know, we put up our own barriers, that's going to really prevent us, I think, from getting there.
I've got a request to my colleagues out there. Please. In the government. The moment you catch yourself in a meeting and you're saying, this is our culture, we always have done it this way, it takes time over here, you are part of the problem. I start asking, what can we do differently to break away from this? So you, the moment you keep asking yourself, or you hear somebody in the meeting asking, gently, politely nudge them into a different shift of mindset where you start looking at, I understand, but how, what else can we do to achieve our goals and get there on time?
And that's the show for this week. Thanks again to Alistair and Rebecca for joining us and giving us a bit of a preview for Forward 50 2024. And a really special thanks to everyone who participated in our Speaker's Corner segment at last year's Forward 50. So will you be there at Forward 50 this year? What's your vision for what digital government should look like in 2030? Let us know. If you're watching on YouTube, tell us in the comments below, or you can email us at podcast@thinkdigital.ca or use the hashtag #LetsThinkDigital on social media. Also, remember to like and subscribe. And if you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app and you like this episode, be sure to give us a 5-star review. We're also on the web at letsthinkdigital.ca. You can visit our website and sign up for our newsletter and also catch up on past episodes of the podcast. Today's episode of Let's Think Digital was produced by myself, Wayne Chu, and Aislinn Bournet. Thanks so much for listening, and let's keep thinking digital.